Awesome. Let's bring him in. JayMoneySports.com talks about all things basketball. Jay, how are you today?
I'm awesome. How are you doing, Dusty?
I'm doing really, really well. Interesting to go through all the stuff today, but let's get into it. How surprising was game three to you? I know game threes mostly are that home team going home, no matter what. If it's like it was the other night, that it was 0-2 for the Cavs, but you always expected to win game three. How different in your mind will game four be?
I think it would be completely different. Game three wasn't a shock. I mean, the outcome wasn't a shock, but the total was. I didn't expect Golden State to go in there and lay such a huge egg. I thought they would lose, but I thought, you know, maybe by 10 or 15. I think game four is going to be completely different. I think they're settled on the ground. They're ready to go, and they're the better team. And they're going to show it tonight. They're going to be a lot better. It's not going to be a 30-point blowout like it was on Wednesday night.
How surprising was it to see Steph Curry just go that length of just struggling? Was that more the more surprising part to you? Didn't hit a three until I want to say about 3-4 minutes left in the third quarter.
And for me, the surprising part of that is that he only shot 13 times, which is insane. I mean, he's the MVP of the league, and he only shot the ball 13 times. And we talked about how he struggled shooting the ball, and he didn't shoot the ball great from three, but he was 6-for-13 from the field. So if you're the MVP and you average 30 points a night, shouldn't you be getting a whole lot more shots up?
Yeah, absolutely. You should get more shots up. I think that was kind of the surprise to me, was what they were able to do. I think Kyrie Irving going off the way he did was a surprise as well. I guess I shouldn't be too surprised, but it was, too, because he hadn't played very well in the first two games. So I guess him busting out was something that I kind of expected, but just not to the extent that he did. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, Kyrie was fantastic. I mean, he needs to play really, really well on the offensive end because he's a liability defensively. So I expected him to play well. I didn't expect him to go off like he did in the first quarter. But he's a star in this league, and he might not be a top 10 player, but he's definitely a top 20, 25 player. So you've got to expect big totals, especially when you're going home. I mean, he didn't get to play at home last year in the finals because he got hurt before they got to go back. And it was a really big thing for him to go back to Cleveland and put up some big numbers and try to prove everybody wrong that he just wasn't an extra piece to LeBron, but that he's a star.
So when you look at tonight, let me ask you this. When we get through the weekend, when we're back on Monday, who is in the lead in this series? Is it an elimination game on Sunday, or are we still playing in the finals, and who has the lead?
Well, I think when we come back Monday, there will be a parade in Oakland. I think it'll be done. I think Golden State wins tonight, then they go home and on Sunday and win it.
That's bold. Because that's really bold. I completely disagree with you. I could see tonight just simply the rhythm, right? LeBron is a guy that how am I going to put this? I think he's a good leader. And I think he does well once things kind of start moving well. The pressure from him changes. Would you agree with that?
Oh, he's a great leader, and he's you know, the most athletically gifted basketball player in the world. And I just think Golden State's too deep. I think they're going to adjust, and I think when they try to take the ball out of Steph Curry's hands, when they're trying to run him off double and triple screens, I think Steve Curry's just going to have him bring the ball up the floor again and have him play and have him control the offense, and I think he's going to take over. I think he's going to do exactly what he did in those last three games against Oklahoma City, and they're going to go home and put that second ring on their finger. And I think he's too good. I think he's too primed to prove that he's the best player in the world. I know he's got a giant chip on his shoulder, and everybody looks at LeBron, and LeBron's fantastic. He's amazing. He's a great leader. Not a great shooter, but he can do everything else at a really, really high clip. But I think Steph Curry's trying to prove to himself and everybody else that he wants that mantle as the best player in the world.
No, I completely agree with you. And it's interesting that that is the conversation coming. While LeBron, I say he's kind of hitting the end of his prime, but he's there, but that someone else could step up and really challenge him for that is something that's very, very interesting and intriguing to me. So now let's switch things from the NBA to local. We talked about a kind of ad nauseum to start the show today. Jordan Chapman transferred from BYU. Others have transferred as well. You kind of talk about this transfer from BYU, the transfers from BYU, what that means to that roster, and of course the season and the era that BYU fans are so excited about?
First off, to me, it's getting college basketball is getting ridiculous. And now I'm not going to put Jordan into this category with everybody else because I think he's got higher goals. I mean, somebody transfer to go to law school, that, you know, that just doesn't happen. I mean, if he's going to play Division I basketball and go to law school, that's pretty unprecedented. You don't hear about that, especially with 3 years of eligibility left. I mean, graduating as a redshirt freshman is unbelievable. So he's kind of on the periphery of that because I think he's looking more forward to his future and his life past basketball. And if you can go to Stanford Law or a place like that and still continue to play basketball, you can't pass up that opportunity. Yeah. But BYU's lost five guys now in the last 2 years. They lost Corey Calvert and Isaac Nielsen and Frank Bartley and Jake Toulson and now Jordan. And while a lot of people don't think that's a big deal, that's significant. But it's not just happening at BYU. There's something like 700 Division I transfers this year. That equates to like two per team, which is insane. I mean, I think they lost four or five guys up to you as well. It really shows that there's a lot of these guys that if they see the writing on the wall, that they're going to bolt because they want to have an opportunity to play. Or in some places, they even kindly get asked to go somewhere else because they want to use their scholarship for somebody else. And I think that needs to change. I think if you're going to, with some of these kids, if they're going to get asked to leave, I don't think they should have to sit out a season. That's not fair to them. If you're going to tell them that there's not going to be playing time and you're better off going somewhere else, then it's not fair to them to make them sit out a year, especially if they've redshirted already. I mean, I think that's pretty brutal. But where is it transitions to, like a BYU roster, it's going to hurt their depth a little bit. I really liked, I don't think losing anybody else really hurt their depth. I think they thought Bartley would hurt them last year, but it didn't really because guys stepped up and played well. But I think this year it's going to hurt their depth a little bit. I really like Jordan as a player. He's starting to come into his own at the end of the season. He's really good defensively. He was the guy on the floor that when he came in the floor, he could slow down the pace of the game a little bit, and it became less frenetic. It became more balanced because he just did the right things. He made the smart pass. He knocked down the open jumper pretty consistently, and he was very mature for a freshman and did some really, really good things for them. And I think as we move forward, while BYU's just absolutely loaded, I think it will definitely hurt their guard depth.
Absolutely. You know, and I think one of the transfers, too, to mention in the last few years that I think actually hurt, where this could be somewhere similar to that, was DeMarcus Harrison. And it's kind of that same thing. We're seeing the change for him. It's just interesting to watch where BYU is going to be heading with this. And for Jordan Chapman, it's kind of a special thing. And it seems like at least one person saying that BYU Law School, J. Reuben Clark School of Law, just wasn't big on him doing both. And so my thing to you is, how would you change it? Because I agree with you. Sitting out a year in some of these cases is kind of ridiculous. What kind of changes would you make? Does it become circumstantial, or what would you propose?
Well, if it's I think it has to be on a case-by-case basis, but I think you put something in place. If a coach tells a kid, you're not going to play here anymore, and these coaches have to be honest about this, but if coaches tell these kids, then they can't make them sit out a year. I mean, you look at the case of Isaac Nielsen, and it was pretty spelled out to us that he was told that he wasn't going to have any more opportunities to play and that he probably should go somewhere else, but he had already redshirted. So he lost a year to sit out before he plays at UVU this year. And that to me is really, really disappointing. When you lose when some of these kids leave in that situation, it's really unfair to them to make them sit out. So if they're asked to leave, they should be given a waiver to be able to play automatically. In the case of DeMarcus Harrison, now that was different because they just gave up. They gave away his scholarship because they thought he was leaving. And then when he decided not to leave, they didn't have a scholarship left. And that was really unfortunate because I think he really could have helped them. But I think that was more of just a misunderstanding than anything else because they assumed he was going on a mission.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of one of those interesting things too. Where do you think BYU is going to go from here? I mean, what does it do for this team? Because this is the era that BYU fans have been dreaming about, waiting for. But what does it mean for the future of what's going to happen? What kind of options they've got? Do you know? Or actually, I think it's too far. Let's go back to that. What do you think he's going to do for this team in here in the next couple of years?
Well, I think it's going to force Dave Rose to play more of a traditional lineup. I think what we're going to see is, instead of seeing a lot of four-guard lineups, I think we're going to see a lot of two- and three-guard lineups, and that's going to give guys the opportunity to develop and play more of a traditional basketball style. That's going to give more minutes on the floor so they can play big. And let's not mince words here. They need to play big this year and the next couple of years, because they're so loaded offensively in the front court that you can't just play one or two bigs and expect them to stick around. Because when you recruit guys like Eric Mika and Peyton Dastrup, they need to be on the floor. They deserve to be on the floor, and they can't be rotating minutes and having four or five guys to play one or two spots. They need to get 30 and 35 minutes a game. So you need to be playing a traditional four and a traditional five and shifting that offense a little bit, because, yeah, you've got some great guards, but you've got some really talented inside players and talented inside players that they haven't had in a long, long time, and they need to take advantage of that, especially in a smaller, less intense West Coast Conference. You need to take advantage of the skill you have inside, because nobody has size like that outside of Gonzaga.
It's interesting, because with who Dave Rose has recruited the last few years, my question was, how are you going to get all these guys on the floor with the guards they had and the post? Let's say Jamal Ates actually comes back healthy and is able to kind of hit his stride. And then you mentioned Mika, Dastrup, and also, you know, you bring in Yoli Childs to that mix. The BYU actually is in a pretty seemingly, if all things go well, we know that they always don't. They are in a pretty decent position. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. You bring in somebody like Yoli Childs, and he can play the three or the four, and he's just a beast. But then you've got kids who are big-time recruits, and it takes a while for guys to get adjusted to the college game. And I would expect Braden Shaw and Jacob Hartsock to both take a huge step forward. And then you still have senior Kyle Davis. So, I mean, they're loaded in the front court. And this way it actually forces Dave Rose to give guys an opportunity and let guys see if they can play a three and they can play bigger lineups and be more aggressive and hit the glass and show that, you know, it's not like these big guys can't get up and down the floor, because they'll get up and down the floor, but then you can also have a post presence and go inside and give it to guys who can finish on a consistent basis.
Absolutely. Well, Jay, we're up against the break, brother. I really appreciate your time, your insights. Jay Yeomans, the series will be over come Monday. And I agree with you. We need to look at changing the transfer rules in NCAA tournament. Give everybody your website one more time and some of the stuff they can find there.
It's jmoneysports.com, and I re-rank all the NBA drafts based on what we know. I do the best list of all time for NBA and college for BYU and Utah and Utah State. And I follow all the Cougars who are playing overseas and all the kids who are leaving and a whole bunch more. So jmoneysports.com.
Awesome. Certainly appreciate it, my man. Take it easy, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Duffy.